The Urim on the thought of the Chazanish, and what we're going to do today, I believe is fascinating, and I want to give a bit of a hakdama. In general, Shavuos is a time. Let's start like that. Shavuos is a time when we are mekabel Torah, and certainly a significant part of our relationship to Torah is that we are part of a Mesorah, and a Mesorah that gets passed on from generation to generation. A critical element of that Mesorah is a commitment and an understanding of the significance of the Chachmei HaMesorah, that there are people who passed it on door achar door. We are not zocheh to a direct revelation, at least in the classical sense, from the Ribono Shel Olam every single day. And a lot of what we rely on, the Kuzari notes in a slightly different way, but a lot of what we rely on comes from a Mesorah of Moshe Kibbutz Torah Mesinai, U'Mesorah, and then it went downwards all the way to us. And in that sense, Emunas Chachamim becomes a critical part, not only of Avodas Hashem in general, but in particular, when we focus on Shavuos, the kind of Kabbalah Sator that a person wants to have is understanding where I am as far as the greater Mesorah and a relationship to Chachamim Kichlal. We happen to live in a world in which, it may have been this way always with a degree of cynicism, but it's certainly the case nowadays, where Emunas Chachamim is under attack. And Muslim is under attack in certain worlds from a variety of different vantage points. One of them, I think, is when you talk even about, one of them has to do with the extent to which people can look things up on Google. The rabbi said this, but I found out that Rav Shlomo Zalman really argues with him, and therefore he doesn't know anything. And sometimes it can be a critique which emerges if you follow some discussions about women's smicha and the like. That a lot of the critique is that the rabbis are biased in their psak, and that's why they're coming out on one side. And the world of kavod chachamim and emunas chachamim is one that, in a certain sense, at times is under attack, especially because ba'avonosinu harabim and with an enormous amount of tsar, we have people who have been identified on some level as being chachamim who have performed acts and committed crimes that have generated a degree of skepticism and real fallout. Nevertheless, despite the fact that there are those who would question the extent to which a person has to have faith and understanding of the significance of Rabbanim, that is a critical part of our Mesorah, and the fact that there are a couple of people here or there that have challenges, and there are a couple of people here or there that have messed up, need not at all challenge the authenticity of what we're doing, and the extent to which we do need on some level to have a degree of Emunas Chachamim, however it is that manifests itself. I want to speak today about a fascinating, fascinating machlokas. It's a machlokas between the Alter of Slabodka and the Chazanish. Let me give a little bit of background, and hopefully if we have time, we'll speak about Rav Huttner's unique angle here. The Chazanish in Emunah and Bitachon has a little bit of a famous section, Gimel Lamed, source number 5 on the sheet, where he talks about Emunas Chachamim and Shochat. As we're quoting a lot in the Yisrael, Professor Biddy Brown points out that this, he doesn't quote it, this Chazanish is really kim'at a direct refutation of a shmuz given by the Alter of Slabodka. The Chazanish, when he was in Lita, heard some of the shmuz of the Alter. The Alter of Slabodka is one of the great giants of the Musar movement and the Rebbe of many of the great Gedolim of the last generation. Ravon Cutler, Rav Ruderman, Rav Huttner, Rav Kamenetsky. These are all Talmidim of the Alter. The Alter is, we spoke about the Alter in Elul time, we spoke about the Alter's perspective on Tshuva. One of the great mechanchim, one of the great Bali Musar. So the Alter gave a shmuz, and the Chazanish, without quoting him, appears to really challenge it. I really just want to go through that machlokes a little bit to understand. It'll give us a good understanding of the Musar movement. It will give us a good understanding of elements of what the Chazanish does. So let's start like this. It really begins with a pasuk in Shmos Chav Gimel, Parash Mishpatim, I believe. The Torah asks a dayan from taking a shochat. You're not allowed to take a bribe. Why am I not allowed to take a bribe? So the pashtus is, in the pasuk, bribes color a person's vision. That if I'm bribed in one direction, I'm more likely to rule in the favor of the person who gave me that bribe. The author of Slabodka says something very, very interesting about this, and you have to take a little bit of a step back to understand something about the Muslim movement Kichlal. The Muslim movement, and this obviously not part of the Muslim movement, the Ramchal, Mesil Sharm relates to already, on the one hand, there was a phenomenon that who's learning Muster Sfarim? So Muster Sfarim are sometimes being learned by those that are not as intellectually engaged. That Muster Sfarim are learned by people that can't sit the whole morning with a Rashba or a Reb Chaim, and therefore they're pulled to Muster because sometimes it's a bit lighter. And therefore you have a phenomenon in which sometimes the intellectual elite, sometimes the greatest Talmidei Chachamim, are not engaged as much in a certain kind of character development. They're not engaged as much in a certain kind of muster because that's not really their primary focus. Now, Ramchal Masil Sharim critiques that. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, when he was founding the Musar movement, part of what he and his Talmidim were trying to do was not just to emphasize a certain significance of Tikkun HaMidos for those that were not really learning in yeshivas, but there was built in a little bit of a critique, or maybe even more than a little bit of a critique, of those who were very, very knowledgeable. There was Rabbi Yisrael and Or Yisrael critiqued Dafka those who were very learned, but he thought did not sufficiently cultivate a certain kind of Yerushalayim, and because they didn't have a certain kind of Yerushalayim, the way that they were going to paskin and the way that they were going to learn Torah was going to be somewhat colored as a result. They may have been great Talmidei Chachamim, but the chisaron of, be it Yerushalayim or a certain kind of Tikkun HaMidos, was going to negatively impact at times their psak. So a big Talmid Chacham who's not as patient, it may be that when he's paskining a shaila, he's paskining it too quickly. He's not sitting there to really get all the details and make sure he understands it as well. He's a big Talmid Chacham, but that chisaron in Midos or that chisaron in Yerushalayim can create certain challenges. The author of Slabarka along those lines gave a shmuz. It's an Oratz Afun. It's a sefer of collections of the sichos of the altar. It's now a two-volume work. Rabbi Simcha Willett published his dissertation on, I didn't publish it yet, wrote a dissertation on the altar of Slabarka's educational philosophy. So he, I think, pointed, there's a two-volume sefer, Sichos HaSaba MiSlabarka, came more recently, which I think he thought was better to work off of. But we're quoting today from Oratz Afun. The altar argued the following. The altar said the Shochad, and this is the Pashtus. If we had to categorize Shochad as being a chok or a mishpat, it's something which is logical or something which is illogical, or illogical, something which is not as logical, we would probably, Pashtus, as the altar, you would categorize Shochad as a mishpat. It is something which is very logical, that a person who's going to accept money from someone, I am more likely to rule in their favor. That's the Pashtus, and that happens to make a good deal of sense. The altar points out the following. This phenomenon, that you are likely as a result of shochad to rule in favor of someone, is not only, first, it is a true and deep psychological insight. People are built that way, that we are more compassionate and we are more likely to rule in favor of those who take care of us a little bit. It's how people work. Says the altar, maybe you would want to argue this is a phenomenon which is only true. Look here, number four. L'chora choshim shadvar mamurim ba'anashim regilim. Maybe you could think that's true with regular people. Ulam mi'divri chazal anu lemeidim, says the Alter Sabatka. But we learn from Chazal that even great Talmidei Chachamim can be subject to shochad. Even great Talmidei Chachamim can lose their objectivity. That's a phenomenon which is real. In order to do that, he points out two Gemaras. One's the Gemara Maseches Ksubis and Daf Kuf Hey. One's the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Yud Ches. The Gemara in Ksubis and Daf Kuf Hey, for those of us that learn Ksubis, we have a list of Chachamim who were very, very choshesh. They were nervous that they had received a bribe. So the Gemara tells us, as an example there, that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, Havi Ragel Arise, his tenant, would often bring him a basket of fruits on Friday. One time he brought it to him on Thursday because he said, I'm going to see you anyway because you're the dayan in my case. You're the diamond case, I'm going to see you anyway, so I brought the basket of fruits today instead of bringing it tomorrow. At that point in time, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, I can't paskin. Shochad. What do you see, says Alter Sabatka? And look at that list. You see that even great Talmidei Chachamim, paskining a case, they were concerned that there's a chance, that there's a little bit of shochad here, that they're going to be biased and paskin incorrectly. They're going to be pulled in one direction. He says, and not only that, I'll give you a better raya, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Melech and Kohen Gadol. When you learn the sugyas there in the second paragraph of Sanhedrin, when you learn the Rambam and Hilchos Sanhedrin, when you're talking about who the Melech has to be a person of enormous, enormous Yerushalayim and enormous spirituality. HaMelech Tzarech Shetiebe Yerushalayim. He has to, Elio's Libo, Bekir, Bo Shafel, V'chol. He has to have good midos. He can't be a Baal Gaiva. The Melech is an exalted person. The halacha even is, the Melech carries with him a Sefer Torah all the time. The Melech is someone who is at a very, very high Madrega. Similarly, the Kohen Gadol, obviously, is also supposed to be the elite of our world. The Keser Kahuna, the Kohen Gadol, he's the only one that's entering into Kodesh HaKadoshim. He's the only one that can go there. He's the most Kadosh person that we have. Shechina midaberes mitoch grono. The Shechinah, he is a Ishasher gam ha-melech tzarech lamod lefanav. Even the melech, who's so chashav, has to stand up when a Kohen Gadol walks in the room. Yesh bo malos yeseros ha-malchei Yehuda. What does the Gemara tell us? A Kohen Gadol and a melech, says the Gemara Sanhedrin, ein moshivin melech b'sanhedrin, v'lo melech v'kohen gadol b'ibor shana. If there's a shayla in Beis Din as the paskin, are we going to institute a leap year or not? So the halach is the melech is not allowed to be on that Beis Din, and the halach is a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to be on that Beis Din. Why not? Why can't the melech be on that Beis Din? Why can't the Kohen Gadol be on that Beis Din? Says the Gemara, melech mishum afsanya, Kohen Gadol mishum tzina. What's the pshat? They are both biased, says the Gemara. A melech is biased because, says Rashi, he pays his soldiers based on a yearly salary, and he wants it to be a leap year, because he's only paying $10,000 a year. And whether that year has 12 months or 13 months, he's paying $10,000. So the melech is biased in that the melech wants it to always be a leap year, so he'll be able to save a little bit of money. The Kohen Gadol is also biased. He's biased in the other direction. He never wants a leap year. You know why? He always wants Yom Kippur to fall out as early as possible. He wants Yom Kippur to fall out sometime in August or September, because the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, the Gemara in Maseches Yuma, the Kohen Gadol is tovel on Yom Kippur a lot of times. He's tovel in the mikvah. And the later Yom Kippur is, the colder it is. Mishum Tzina. So he doesn't want to have to go into a mikvah and be so cold. It's like the difference between Sukkot, if you're, this year I was in Eretz Yisrael the first day of Sukkot, and I was in Montreal the last days. The difference between when it's warm and cold and you have to be outside is a significant difference. The Kohen Gadol, he's told on a mikvah. He wants it to be warmer, and therefore he's going to be biased a little bit. Says the author's book, what do I learn from here? The Melech and the Kohen Gadol, they're the top. They're the top of Yadus as far as rabbinic leadership. And these are people, says the altar, that we are concerned they're going to have Negias. They're going to have Negias. And therefore, says the altar of Sabaka, what we see from here, the notion of Shochat, the notion of personal Negia, is one that very much impacts every single person. The altar goes on to point out, that Rabbi Sol Salanter used to emphasize, every person's really a Dayan. I may not be a Dayan formally in any particular case, but I'm a Dayan and I'm always assessing things about my own life. I'm always assessing things about where I'm at. So what am I really doing, says the altar. A person has to be aware of their negias. A person has to be aware of their own negias. That's why it's very helpful to consult. That's why it's very helpful to have rebbeim, mentors, friends, family members that we can talk to, who can help us make sure that we're doing things not based on negias, but based on a certain kind of yashras. But that's an insight of the altar of Sabatka. Shocha the Mishpat, Raya from Gemara Sanhedrin, Raya from Gemara Ksubis, that people are subject to a certain degree of bias. The Chazanish comes along in Emunah B'Tachon, and he, again, you'll see the way that he says it. Go to the second page here, in the second paragraph. V'hine, enisharta ha-shocha michla ha-mishpatim elo michla ha-chukim. First of all, let's recategorize things. He's going to go through the riot that the altar brings. It really seems like it's a pretty direct response. The Chazan as follows. A Talmud Chacham is objective. A person who's mamish, great in learning, is objective. His own negias don't matter that much. He cares about Ratzon Hashem, he cares about Torah, he understands that his own negias are nothing compared to the Chashivas HaTorah. He is not at all going to be biased. Says the Chazan, I'll give you riyas. A Chacham is allowed to paskin for himself. He can paskin a shayla for himself about whether chicken is treif or kosher, even if he has no other food to eat in Lechorah, is totally biased to paskin it's kosher. A chacham can paskin a shayla that was coming to matzah, even though he's dealing with a shayla that may have enormous financial implications. He can paskin those shaylas. A chacham is allowed to paskin shaylas in a variety of areas of halacha that are going to impact him. If he's really biased, says the Chazan Ish, how is he allowed to paskin for himself? How could the Torah ever permit that? We should require that any time you're going to buy a lulav and you're the biggest Talmud Chacham in the world You should have to ask that child to someone else because it may have financial implications. This lulav you found may have been a little bit cheaper. And maybe there's a certain bias there because you want to spend less money on a lulav. Maybe in a certain world there's bias because you want to spend more money on a lulav and you want to, it feels like a little bit more religious. If I drop like an insane amount of money on a lulav, that feels very good sometimes. So you have different biases and directions, but maybe I just have to ask that. It's good to buy a kosher lulav, and we should be careful about that. It's important that, again, of course, there's bias, and they're still giving Paschim in their own Shaila. Not only that, the Chaznish is very, very worried about an implication of what the altar writes. And if you, it could be the altar himself was sensitive to this. Says the Chaznish, nothing will erode and destroy Emunas Chachamim like that orientation. Because once you're saying that all Chachamim can be biased, it's possible. It's a basic psychological fact and one that we can't overcome. So why should I ever really listen to Chachamim? Why should I ever listen to Chachamim? Isn't it always possible that they're biased? So I have, maybe I'm going to say, I don't want to listen to Chachamim about this issue because they have some personal, it's in their personal interest to come out and decide. So you're going to say, as an example, I don't want to listen to why Rosh Yeshiva that say women can't be rabbis because they're just trying to keep all the pulpits for their male Talmidim. And therefore, that's why they're coming out against female rabbis. Now, it happens to be like, if you're thinking of points of bias, that to me, that strikes me as a very not compelling one, especially if you have interaction. I don't know. To me, that seems like unbelievably not compelling. Even if I were trying to argue that they were biased, I think I would be brave enough to come up with something better than that. But says the Chazanish, there's something that can really take a toll on Amunus Hachamim. Because he gives the following example. Let's say a community is having a machlokas over who the next rabbi their community should be. It's been known to happen in communities that they have a hard time finding a rabbi. So what's happening? When you're having that machlokas, you have a machlokas. So what would be the natural thing to do, says Chazon Ish? Again, this is in the world of the Chazon Ish. He's a real Das Torah kind of guy. He's a real Das Torah gadol. So what you should ask a Torah giant who can answer, this is the better rav for you. This is the better rav for the community, things like that. Says the Chazon Ish, but once you know that maybe there's personal interest at stake, once you know maybe there's a degree of bias there, so then why would the community ever be makabel what that person says? I know he's a great Talmid Chacham, I know he's amazing, but I can't ever say for sure that this person's not impacted by their bias, because isn't that a basic psychological fact? Isn't that a basic psychological fact? That's the orientation of the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish then goes through, what about the Gemara and Ksubis? What about the Gemara and Sanhedrin? That sounds like there is bias. So he suggests a couple of things. Number one, he points out, maybe those things are chumras, maybe those things are midas chasidas. But what about shochad itself? Shochad the Torah asers. Isn't the Torah explicit? We aser shochad because it's going to cause bias. So Chazon Ish offers the following insight. This is unbelievable. You have to enter into the world of like either the Maharal or Halachic Man, depending on your own orientation, in order to be able to appreciate what the Chazon Ish is doing. He says, Torah asers shochad, and shochad colors a person's vision. What causes what? What causes what? The simple pshat, the way the altar would say it, shochad colors a person's vision, and that's why the Torah asers it. It's a basic psychological reality. People are subject to bribes and the like, and therefore the Torah asers it. However, suggests the Chazon Ish, really it should go in the other direction, and this is what he means when he says it's a chok. What he means is the following. It's a chok. Right now, a Talmid Chacham can view things objectively. That's why he can paskin in all areas of Torah. He can view things objectively. However, the Torah asered, when you're functioning as a dayan, the Torah asered shochad. And because the Torah aser chochad, istakla b'oraisa u'bare alma, it's the Torah's laws which then impact elements of how people function. And because the Torah aser chochad, so now when you accept the chochad, your vision is going to be colored. It doesn't really make sense. In all the areas of Torah, you're not going to be biased as a result. But because the Torah says when you're really a dayan, if I accept a formal chochad as a dayan, that's aser. What that did was, it caused me to view things a certain way. It's not that I'm biased and therefore the Torah asers me. It's that the Torah asered it and that creates in this particular realm of Shokar, Chachamim, and Dayan, it creates a psul. But other than that particular limited realm where you're functioning as a Dayan, no chashash at all, nothing to be worried about, you're going to be totally objective. Says the Chazon Ish, when you rely on Chachamim, you can assume that they are going to be totally objective. Let's chazer what we did so far, because then I want to share with you a mahalach we're putting there that I think is I find to be fascinating. And I'll share with you why. We have a bit of a machlokas. We rely a lot on Emunas Chachamim. Some worlds more, some worlds less, but we do have a certain kind of orientation which we very much value. Chachamim, a lot of our Mesorah is predicated on the Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, and not just Kibel Torah Misinai, but the Mesorah Yeshua, Yeshua is a Kame, is a Kame Nevi'im. A lot of it has to do with that. V'adav Sabarka, what's important to understand, people are subject to a certain kind of Negiyas, all people, even great people. For the Chazon Ish, no, great people, giants, Torah giants, are totally objective. There are limited cases where Chazal said, the Torah taught us, because there's a Metzias and Isser of Shochad, and that's going to come along and make them in a particular case. In a particular limited case, they're going to have Hashocha Yever Pichem Bisav Divrei Tzadikim. But it's not a sort of psychological reality, which is true for all people. It's not true in all cases. Chachamim can overcome it. It means that there are specific locations. What would the altar say back about Emunas Chachamim? So I'll share with you two thoughts. Number one, the altar may have argued. Again, the first one is less. Let's find the other way. Or one could say one of two things. You could argue that there should still be a degree of Emunas Chachamim, because while there's a chance that they may, even if you believe there's a chance there's a Negiya there, their potential Negiya is still adif to rely on than me that I don't even know enough Torah, and me that I may not be as refined and may even be more likely. The altar is not saying that there's no Emunas Chachamim bichlal. He's saying that there is a chashash of Negiyas. Okay, so it's not as 100% ironclad. Maybe. Look over what the altar, I think, would probably say, if you would go further, is that that's where Limud HaMusar comes in. That while it's true that there is a potential for bias with all people, it doesn't mean that it's you can't overcome that bias at all. A person, number one, who cultivates certain kind of midos, people who have a certain kind of Yirah Shamayim, especially if they're then going, they're consulting with others, you can overcome a degree of that bias. A lot of it's not one person that your entire, all of Torah is dependent on. It's many, many people, and there's a certain kind of, it's true every person has that chashash, but indeed not at all challenge our real Emunas Chachamim. The fact that there are people who work on themselves can overcome it much, much easier. It's easier for them. And the fact that they're consulting, you have other Chachamim who come to similar conclusions, that l'chor is where they would go. Comes along a footner in a Maimar Pachad Yitzchak on Shavuos. The footner, I'll just give this is my own take on it. The footner is a Talmud of the Altar Sabatka, who is very much Machshav of the Chazon Ish. The footner is a Talmud of the Altar Sabatka, primary, who is very, very much Machshav, the Chazon Ish. Now, the Chazon Ish has some very strong words for where this could go. He looks, the Chazon Ish writes that if you really are buying into the Mahalacha, Hachamim Arno Gevedav, so he writes, and those of us that are familiar with the Chazon Ish's style, this is not so uncharacteristic. He writes, if you do this, if you start taking this mahalach and you really go too far with it, so you become you're an apikores at the Chazon Ish, because you're challenging too much. So Rav Hutner has to come in Pachad Yitzchak, and Rav Hutner quotes the Chazon Ish and more or less accepts the Chazon Ish. But he's a Talmud of the Altar of Sabatka. So what's Rav Hutner going to do? I find this to be awesome. It's in Shavuos in Maimer Mem Dalet. It's a nice mimer. He quotes the Chazon Ish at length, and he writes like this. Even read this line, and I don't know, maybe I'm just reading into this, but I find this to be Uvevadai she'ein anu barm lekan lefarish tamim lechok zeh. I accept the Chazon Ish that it's a chok. Haposel negiyah b'mishpat. Afal pi shebechol sukorah ein hu posel. I get the Chazon Ish, it's really a chok. I don't want to give a reason for that. Aval mikom makom barm anu lefarish es gidro shel achok hazeh. What Rav Hutner is doing is essentially giving you your middle approach. I'm not going to say mishpat in the extreme way of Altar Sabatka. I'm not going to just say it's stam a chok, that bias, shochad, can passel the way that the Chazon Ish says it. I'm going to more or less work with the Chazon Ish, but I'm going to try to explain where this comes from. I'm going to try to give some insight into the source of this bias. He really does, in a very powerful way, explain something about the Chas Nishis Mahalach, and I'll share with you now. It's an unbelievable insight, and it's classic Rav Huttner. Why would it be that in all areas of Torah, we're not concerned with Negiah, we're not concerned with Negiah, we're not concerned that a person is going to be biased, except for the world of Mishpat? You can paskin a shayla about your own chicken, about chametz u'matzah, but you can't paskin when there are two baladinim sitting right in front of you. I can't paskin. Why? So Rav Huttner suggests the following insight to help explain, make the Chas Nishis less of a chok, but to give a degree of hesber to it. He writes like this. The Gemara tells Masech Shabbos, Daf Kaflam Gimel, the Gemara Masech Sota, Daf Yudalet, that we have a principle of Mahu Afata, that a person is supposed to model himself after the Ribono Shel Olam. Mahu Rachum Afata Rachum. Mahu Chanun Afata Chanun. You're supposed to be merciful, just like the Ribono Shel Olam is merciful. The Maharal points out, well, you know, God also gives out harsh judgment. Should we say that just as God is like always judging Rishayim, that our midah also to model ourselves like Ribono Shel Olam, we should also be judging Rishayim in a very, very harsh way? Answers Maharal, no. That's not how it works. We're supposed to model ourselves after Ribono Shel Olam as far as the chesed of the Ribono Shel Olam, but we don't model ourselves after Ribono Shel Olam as far as our mishpat. Chesed is something which is given over to each person. They have a bit of chesed there. The Ribono Shel Olam expects us to be anshei chesed. And because we are people who have chesed, so part of what we're supposed to do is to cultivate a personality where we're like the Ribono Shel Olam also. He has chesed and we have chesed. Ribono Shel Olam gave it to each and every person a degree of chesed. That's what Hashem gave us, and that's how we are supposed to function. Mishpat, however, was not given to us. Mishpat is not pre-programmed in every Jew. Mishpat is not the expectation of every kol echad ve'echad. We're not supposed to judge the way the Ribono Shel Olam judges. What is the heter to judge then? Where does the heter to judge come from, asked Huttner? If really chesed is where it's supposed to be at, so how can I play God as an example? How could I be a dayan in a case? Mishpat. When you're a real dayan, there are two litigants in front of you, suddenly I'm allowed to be a dayan. Ask Rav Huttner, how is that okay? Where's the heter for that? We're not built for that. We're built for chesed. That's what we have. That's where we mirror Ribono Shel Olam. I'm not supposed to mirror Ribono Shel Olam in his mishpat, so how can I be a dayan in the case? If Zev and Mori are fighting about who owes who money, how can I be a dayan that's limited to Ribono Shel Olam? So says Rav Huttner, because when you're sitting as a dayan, it's me'ein shechusayu, you are functioning as a shliach of Ribono Shel Olam. A dayan, a lot of riots is episode, which in general, when you learn Sanhedrin, he is functioning as a shliach of Ribono Shel Olam. The difference in shechusayu, that has to do with the original, but I'm not functioning on my own, I'm working as a shliach of Hashem. Think about, for those that are like, you know, being done in ketosis right now, you're a shlichus where you lose your identity. You're like a yada arichta kind of a shlichus. You're a shliach where you're not an independent baldover in the world of Reb Chaim. You're a shliach where I'm kolkulo looking back and tied into the mishaleach with no independent identity. I'm functioning like, that's the heter I have to paskin any based in case. That's the only heter I have. And I'm a member of based in. There are two litigants in front of me. What allows me to paskin is that I am working not because of me, like the chesed shabo, but I'm functioning from Ribono Shel Olam's mishpat. I'm a shliach of Ribono Shel Olam to give out that mishpat. He says, according to the following shtick, it's an unbelievable idea. You know why shochad is only an issue in mishpat? Why is shochad only an issue for dayanim who are paskening? It's not an issue in chametz u'matzah. It's not an issue in anywhere else, in treifos. Why is it only an issue in mishpat? Says Rav Huttner, that's Pshat in the Chas Nish. Why is it limited to Mishpat? Because Dafka in Mishpat, I'm a Shliach of the Ribono Shel Olam. And what does it mean to be a Shliach? A Shliach is someone who loses their identity. A Shliach is someone who's called Kulo, doing what the messenger wants. That's why he doesn't quote this, but Mashal Mahadav Radoma, a Malach, Chazal tell us, can only do one Shlichas at a time. Because a Malach has to be called Kulo defined by one mission. Once you have a little bit of bias, suggests Rav Huttner, you can no longer be a Dayan. You know why you can't be a Dayan if you have a degree of bias? Because now I'm not kolkulo acting in Hashem's interest. I'm acting in my own. And it's a din in shlichas. If I'm a shlichah of the Ribono Shel Olam, it has to be just me and Hashem. And if there's just Hashem, I'm just caring about Hashem, I'm a pure shliach of Ribono Shel Olam. And if I introduce a little bit of bias, what's happening is, says Rav Huttner, you are no longer really Hashem shliach. The only hector you have to be a dayan is your Hashem shliach. Once I care about my own self-interest, I took a shochad, by definition, I become a little bit pasul. Was that more or less clear? I got like a 1 to 5 on this? 1 to 1. Okay, let's try and chazer what we spoke about, and I'll end with just a yesod. A lot of our mesorah of the Moshe Kibbol Torah Misinai begins from Sinai, but it's a mesorah Yoshua. It's a mesorah that gets passed on door achar door achar door achar door. That's part of what we are. We're one more link in a mesorah, and a very, very powerful one. One that has the ability at times to remain vibrant and have chiddush. But we're part of a mesorah with Musa Chamin. There's a very, very important machlokas about when you relate to Chachamim, to what extent can there be a degree of bias? The Giyas, are they there or not? The Altus Bakar argues, for sure, even the greats, Melech, Sanhedrin, Tigmar, Mesach, Sanhedrin, Melech, Kohen Gadol, they could be subject to that degree of bias. However, the Chaznish argues absolutely not. Now, first of all, I think it's not true halachically. You can pass on trials that are, even if you have a self-interest in the case. And not only that, what that does, as far as Musa Chachamim, I think it's not true. It's destructive, and I don't think that's what we believe in. We believe Chachamim can overcome their own natural negiyas. Chachamim can be really objective. Rav Huttner came along and gave a little bit of a knesh about why Dafka and Beis Din suddenly things change. Why Dafka and Beis Din Shochad becomes more of an issue, suggests Rav Huttner, because Dafka and Beis Din, you're functioning as a shliach of Hashem, you have no right to paskin otherwise. Mishpat is not something which man is meant to do. Once I have a personal stake in the case, so now I'm suddenly no longer able to do it. I opened up with something, and I want to end with it also. In our particular, in the world now, again, depending on what you read, there are many who have raised challenges and questions about Emunas Chachamim and the role that it really should play. Because Emunas Chachamim, sometimes we live lives of disappointment. We are exposed to people and we feel a degree of disappointment. Sometimes people that we thought were great, and suddenly we discover less so. And sometimes we can hear things of people of a lot of questioning and the like. Questioning is something which is at times valuable. That's the Reb Chaim Volozhiner V'yavek Yishimo. That sometimes there can be an element of fighting and questioning is something which can be very, very valuable. At the same time, we don't want to lose an appreciation at all for what it means to have a little bit of a Musa Chamim, what it means to believe that there are people who are really great, to believe that there are people who are really, really giants, really, really giants. And I think it's appropriate, and it's an important theme this time of year, especially in Shavuos. It's not bad to try to cultivate that a little bit in ourselves, a degree of Emunas Chachamim. We live in a world where, you know, we have a bit less of that, where rabbis are not as distant as they once were, probably, you know, a generation or two ago. And it's important to cultivate that. One of the ways we cultivate that, I would just suggest, sometimes even learning the svarim of some of the real giants. Sometimes you learn a brisker rav, and it gives you an appreciation for what greatness was. And sometimes when you hear stories about people and you have exposure to some wonderful people and you see their greatness time and time again, you really see their greatness. If you've had this chus to be around big people sometimes, you see the way they act. So some of those arguments about how, you know, you see a certain kind of tzidkus and you see something which is powerful, and the notion of there being critical links in your misora is it's very easy to accept sometimes when you have the right role models and when you have exposure to some really, really big people. The Machlokes Altar Sabatka and the Chaznish is a very, very important one. It's part of the Chaznish's longer critique of elements of the Musar movement, but it is it's certainly a very, very chashuv so to be aware of, and for us as people to be aware of the fact that there are times where a person does have certain negiyas, and for me, myself, as the Altar said, we all judge at different times, to be aware of our own negiyas and hopefully to be able to deal properly. As the Gemara says in Shabbos, Kol Danes Chaver L'Kavschos, Danes Osol L'Kavschos, we should be zocha that in all of the judging that we may do, it should be done in a positive way, because the Gemara tells us that if we do things in a positive way and we view people in a positive light, the Baruch Shalom will also view us in a positive light. Shkarek, guys, have a great day.